be that way.
Nature Channel. The meeting's now in order on June the 9th. And the first order of business is the roll call. Mr. John Updike?
Here.
Gary?
Here.
Bob is here.
Here.
Bill is here. Mr. Ann Arbor is here.
I have been called to order.
Rolio?
I'm here.
And Robert?
Yes, here.
All present and accounted for. Okay. First order of business. The approval of the minutes. We had a work session on May 27th and a regular session on May 27th.
Having read both sets of minutes and not seeing anything wrong with either, I move we approve both the work session minutes of May 27th and the regular session minutes of May 27th.
I will second that.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Don't hear any. Okay.
Warren abstained.
Oh, you weren't here.
I wasn't here.
I was here partially because I had to run to the hospital. Mm. Okay, so, and we do have two people on Zoom, or is it three? I can't see, no. Meg Reed and Brett Shipton. Okay. So I need to, since this is a quasi or a legislative hearing, I need to do some reading here. This is a time set for a public hearing on a proposal to adopt or amend the Newport Municipal Code, comprehensive plan, map inventories, land use regulations, or other policy documents that affect the entire city. And what we're talking about today is file number 2-Z-25, changes to the geologic hazard code regarding parties qualified to prepare reports. This statement applies to all hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented toward the request being heard must be directed toward the relevant criteria and the Newport Comprehensive Plan, the Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the speaker believes apply to the decision. Failure of anyone to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue will preclude an appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, known as LUBA. An issue which may be the basis of an appeal to LUBA shall be raised not later than the close of the record at or following this evidentiary hearing. Such issues shall be raised and accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. The failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of a hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. If such a request is made, then the hearing will be continued to a date certain and schedule set for submittal of additional testimony. A period for parties to respond to the new testimony and a period whereby the applicant can provide final argument. And now I need to read a piece since we have Zoom people on. Where's my Zoom
thing? On the back? Or the other one, maybe? I don't know where it is.
I don't know. I lost mine and I'm borrowing yours. Do we have a Zoom?
Let's see. I think I maybe can pull it up here. Here's a draft that I had done. Can you read that? Make it bigger?
This meeting is being conducted by Zoom video conference. Before we get started, I'd like to provide staff a moment to identify individuals that have dialed in. We have Meg Ryan and Brett Shipton. Individuals wishing to speak should use the raise hand feature, which can be found by clicking on the participants button on the bottom of a computer screen, the raise hand button on the bottom of a smartphone, or by dialing 9 on the landline. I will call out the order of testimony in cases where multiple hands are raised. Please keep your microphone muted unless you are speaking. Press star six to mute and unmute a landline. Participants may participate by video or phone, and we can make the shared screen feature available for those that wish to make a presentation. Information shared with the commission in this manner is part of the record, and the copy of the materials will need to be provided to staff. At this time, I will ask commission members to disclose any actual or potential financial interest they may have related to this agenda item. Hearing none, we'll move on. If anyone has an objection to the participation of any commissioner or the commission as a whole, please raise that objection now by using the raise hand feature on the bottom of your screen. I don't see any raised hand. Does anybody on Zoom want to speak up? Going once, twice, okay. Go on. The Planning Commission is required to hold at least one public hearing before making a recommendation to the City Council on how to proceed with a legislative proposal. City Council will hold a public hearing at a later date to which it will consider the Commission's recommendation and take additional public testimony. A few announcements. Hearing will proceed in the following order. Staff report, public testimony. The record closes for public testimony. Commission deliberation and questions and the commission recommendation. All testimony and evidence submitted, either oral or in writing, must be directed toward the relevant issues. If any person believes that other issues apply, in addition to those addressed in the staff report, those issues must be discussed while the record is open. If you fail to raise an issue on the record, supported by statements or evidence sufficient to give the city or other parties an opportunity to respond to the issue, you may be precluded from appealing that issue to the Land Use Board of Appeals. There's some sign-off cords up there. When you are testifying, please state your name and address for the record, and identify the issue to which your testimony is directed by stating the section of the ordinance, comprehensive plan, state statute, or other legal authority to which your evidence or arguments are directed. And since there's only two, we want to avoid repetitive testimony, and that wraps that up. So next up is the staff report.
Thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development Department. So in a minute, I'm gonna bring up a copy of the code. We'll just touch on where some of the more significant changes are. But as you recall, this was initiated by the Planning Commission following receipt of a request from Brett Shipton, who will be is available providing comment tonight, where Mr. Shipton was requesting that the city allow geotechnical engineers to be able to prepare geologic reports. The city of Newport's geologic hazards code was substantially overhauled in 2011. We made minor changes relative to peer review and active slide areas later, but the bulk of the code dates about that vintage. As we kind of walk through this, you know, a lot of the changes we'll be discussing tonight really have come through an evolution in geologic hazard codes in the state. You had a chance to take a look at some other jurisdictions' codes. Those that tend to have same kind of vintage as Newport's tend to be limited just to certified engineering geologists being the ones who prepare geologic reports. The newer codes have a little bit more flexibility in them, and you know, that's probably also related to the fact that DLCD, or Department of Land Conservation Development, so I gotta be careful with my acronyms, put a pretty thorough guidance document out in 2019, which made it clear that both certified engineering geologists and geotechnical engineers are qualified to prepare reports of this nature. And so let me touch on this. I'm going to go ahead and do a share screen here, if I can. Tessa should pop up here in a second, and I'll make it as big as I can. Beep. Delay. I got the time delay thing going here. Let's see if this will work. I'll stick with that. Okay, so there are a few spots where I was just trying to clean up section chapter references and messed up cross references. I'm not going to spend time discussing those, but if you have a question, please feel free to raise it. The first round of area where there was a significant change is under 040 exemptions. I did add a new one. This is something that the Tillamook County Code has. And I had a chance to talk to Oregon Parks and Recreation staff. You know, they also have a geologic review, and their geologic review applies to shoreline alterations, you know, within their jurisdiction. So in the interest of not overlapping and requiring duplicative review, that's where this is coming from. And so, again, it would be things such as, you know, embankment armoring is common where it's permissible still. You know, in Oregon, there are certain areas where you can do riprap, and there are other areas where you can't. It depends on the, you know, when you had development on your property. And if that alteration is entirely below the vegetation line, then that would be Oregon Park and Rec's exclusive jurisdiction. If it's a larger project where you have OPRD jurisdiction and city jurisdiction, so the embankment armoring goes up above the veg line, then we would be involved because it would not be exclusive jurisdiction of Oregon Park and Rec. So that's what that's about.
Yeah, I hate to be quite that nitpicky, but the word only belongs before the word by, not before the word to. Modifying
only to
OPRD. It's not modifying regulation.
So you're suggesting that shoreline alteration include?
So structures subject to regulation only by OPRD.
Okay. That's fine. Jotting a note down, that's all. Again, I can fix that. Next one is in 060, and that's probably your biggest change. And so that's your geologic report guidelines. Now, you've seen a previous draft in a work session where, you know, basically we're adding in language that allows geotechnical engineers you know, where it was just referencing certified engineering geologists, so you've got both referenced there. So the way this code structured, both geotechnical engineers and certified engineering geologists can prepare reports. This language, which I borrowed from the Tillamook County Code, that was a 2022 code. It's one that the boards of both the certified engineering geologist and geotechnical engineers weighed in on as part of the development of that code and found it acceptable, and that the professionals that they oversee can prepare reports under that code. So I just, you know, it's not reinventing the wheel, particularly in this area, which can get quite litigious. Try to keep the language consistent. I pulled in that language from the Tillamook code. And what it does is it doesn't hold geotechnical engineers to having to prepare a report based on guidelines that the engineering geologists put out. That's one you can do. You know, is the report can be prepared consistent with the guidelines from the Oregon State Board of Geologist Examiners guidelines for preparing engineering geologic reports in Oregon, or other published best practices. This is the new language, guidelines for engineering geologic or geotechnical engineering reports consistent with current scientific and engineering principles. I'm going to be butchering this stuff as I go through. I apologize. It's like my command of the English language. I'm a little loose tonight. But that provides some flexibility. So, you know, a geotechnical engineer can say, okay, I'm going to prepare this report, and these are the guidelines I'm utilizing, and they're submitted as part of that. Some other key pieces here.
Can we go back to, must be 050.
Oh, we're going back up here.
E. Okay.
Yeah. That.
The report shall include specifications for how engineering solution is to be constructed, period. Or is that a comma or a period?
Comma. Well, that actually should be a period. I'll fix that.
Yeah, there's something funny about the way that reads. That's all.
Yeah, it should be a period. I'll fix that.
Thank you. Now 060B.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't that definition be in the definition section?
For ocean.
Oceanfront property. Seems weird to define it here.
I think it's just we could.
Whatever you think is best, but
okay. I think in this context, this is helpful because it's right there, and if you're having a conversation with somebody, it's very clear what we mean by ocean.
Either way, same meaning, but it just structure. Yeah. Okay.
So under C, geologic reports shall address sections. I did expand that to include the drainage requirement, which was already in the code, but it wasn't explicitly called out as needing to be addressed in geologic reports. Now, to be clear, geologic reports almost invariably address drainage, because how water is managed is a significant factor when you're doing development in an unstable sloped area. You know, they're going to generally speaking, they don't want to see the water infiltrate, because that's going to exacerbate the conditions on the site. They generally want a pipe solution and take it, you know, down the slope before it's dissipated at the base of the slope. That's common that we see in a lot of those reports. Now, occasionally they'll, you know, we'll get a report that comes in and says, well, it's okay to infiltrate. That's often because of very site-specific conditions where the engineer believes that that's an appropriate solution. But now the code is just explicitly saying you've got to address drainage in your report. And then when we get to 1421-100, I did update that provision to align with a more recently adopted comp plan policy that we put in that says how the city will regulate and require drainage to be managed. what we had in this code was an older, outdated, more outdated language. I think it dropped off. My Zoom is trying to reconnect. All right, while the computer's thinking about trying to reconnect to Zoom, I'm going to go ahead and just keep going through here. You all have a paper copy, so I'll just say which piece I'm talking about. So under the geologic reports, under 1421.060D is a new section that indicates that the preparer of the report, a statement that all of the applicable content requirements have been addressed and or are not applicable to the review. An exclamation shall be accompanied with any requirement identified as not applicable. So we want them to, if they say it's not applicable, why is it not applicable? A description of the qualifications of the individual that prepared the report. If multiple individuals contributed to the report, then each shall sign and stamp their own work products. And that's not uncommon. We already have that happen in many circumstances, particularly if there's an engineering solution. Certified engineering geologist does a baseline report, and you'd end up having a supplemental from, say, a geotechnical engineer or civil engineer who did the specs for, say, the retaining wall. And then three, a statement by the preparer that they've they have the appropriate qualifications to have completed the report and all its contents. So I think that, you know, I think really kind of does a nice job of, okay, if you're going to prepare a report, you've got to, you know, you've got to demonstrate that you're qualified. And it, what it also does is these are statements coming from the preparer. It does not put, still here, it does not put the city in a position where we are reviewing somebody's resume to determine if we think they're qualified, which is a position the city does not want to be in. That is a liability issue that then we take on, and we don't want to do that. We'll leave it to the licensed professionals. They've got to stamp this work. They won't do this work if they don't feel they're qualified, generally because they're taking on the liability of whatever their recommendations are.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I was reading through this, and we're a coastal community. We have a harbor and so on and so forth. Is there anything in here that might be applicable to the Army Corps of Engineers, like where they would have jurisdiction? Or there might be a conflict?
No, because our mapped hazard areas don't extend into the area where the Corps would have jurisdiction. All right. So that shouldn't be an issue. The other area in here, 1421.100 is where the stormwater
Derek,
management.
But before you jump to that, just a small thing on D2. I think than is supposed to be then with an E. It's an if then
thing. Appreciate that.
Yep.
Good catch. I missed it.
You're setting a high bar, so I'm trying.
So for stormwater requirements under 1421.100, eliminated the slope factor because that's not a factor any longer in terms of what the city's policy is. And that policy is under the stormwater section of our comp plan. And I included a copy of that in your packet, so you had a chance to see that. That was adopted a number of years after the language we're modifying landed in here. So the new language, you know, is just very explicit. You know, if you're for structures, driveways, parking areas, or other impervious surfaces, the volume and velocity of stormwater attributed to a 25-year, 24-hour storm event shall be managed on-site or directed to a downstream conveyance system with sufficient capacity, so as not to flood adjacent or downstream property. Done. And so that then aligns with the comp plan policy, whereas the current language does not. So that's really the scope of the changes that are in here. You had two comments. You had comments that came in from Jonathan Allen with Dogami, where he said he didn't have any issues with what I just covered, and that, you know, the letter from the Oregon Geologist Board kind of really summarized in his mind, you know, really what the boundaries of certified engineering geologist responsibilities are. And then you had from Dave Rankin, he's a certified engineering geologist, some comments. And Dave's done a fair amount of work in the city, quite a bit actually down in the South Shore area in the dune hazard areas. But he supported, he wanted to make sure that statement of qualifications requirement is in there, and it is in the code. We just talked about that. But he also recommended resumes, which, you know, we can put in there, but I need a caveat. If we require somebody to submit a resume with every one of these, then we need to think about, well, for what purpose? And that's where I'm going to come back. We do not want to be in a position, that is the city, of reviewing somebody's resume and making a call as to whether or not we think they are or not qualified. We just don't want to be there. Now, if you want to add a resume requirement so it's in the record if somebody appeals, that's fine, and they can duke that out. But I just don't, you know, from the city's staff perspective, we're not, and we brought this up with city legal counsel, the city does not want to be in a position where we're making a judgment call as to whether or not somebody is or isn't qualified.
That was going to be my question on that. On that point was, what's the purpose?
And that's kind of where I'm at. I would prefer not to see it in there because I think it begs the question then, are you making a call? And I don't think we just don't want to be there. And that's, you know, and that's where most jurisdictions are with these geologic codes. The cities create a framework that is designed to ensure that appropriately qualified people are evaluating, you know, these sites because these sites have, you know, conditions that require that additional detailed analysis, but we don't want to be the ones, you know, that are trying to make judgment calls as to whether or not, you know, somebody's appropriately qualified or we're taking issue with their particular recommendation because, you know, I'm not an engineering geologist, and I'm not a geotechnical engineer, and we don't have them on staff. And so we just want to, okay, you provided all the information, you've addressed all of the issues, you've provided a statement that you believe you're qualified and the guidelines by which that you followed for this report, we're good. We're making sure that information is in.
But you could word it mm-hmm. such that it's just a requirement of the submission, just like a name and address is a requirement of the submission. And that then potentially in the future in a court somewhere, might be valuable information. I'm not convinced, but I suppose an argument can be made that it would simplify later court actions. Have nothing to do with us, and we can mm-hmm. disclaim that. But it would allow a court in the future to examine those resumes and make their own determination.
Perhaps, yeah. I think the statement of qualification is the biggie, and that's in there. You know, that they have to say, hey, look, I am qualified to do this. And then they have to stamp the, you know, the product. So they're putting their license on the line if something happens. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the resume, but anyhow,
I did have one more thing on the words here.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, you jumped into that. 14.21.120.
Sure. Come back up there. Peer review within active landslide zones.
Right. In the third paragraph, the last sentence says, such specifications shall be subject to peer review. And isn't that putting a burden on us or to pay for a peer review, even for the simplest little modification? It just requires a
three-foot retaining wall.
Okay, I'm going to step this back. Peer review is only required within active landslide zones.
Well, so, and where does it say that?
1421.120. That's the header. Peer review within active landslide zones. So then upon receiving an application for development within an active landslide zone.
Okay. I thought this was always a requirement if there was an engineering.
No, we only require peer review, and this was a later add after 2011.
Right.
You know, where you felt you actually had some property owners bring this issue up, and you felt it was appropriate to put in place a peer review requirement. Because active landslide zones are ones where you've got active movement occurring. It's a higher risk to develop in those areas, and you have a higher risk that whatever you're doing is going to cause issues for somebody else. And so you felt that peer review is required. The way that works is they have to pay a deposit, they have to pay a fee to cover the cost of that peer review. And then we send it out. The city selects who that is. So we'll send it out. And what this gets at is if it's a combination of a certified engineering geologist and then, say, a geotechnical engineer who provides some specs on a retaining wall or a particular foundation design, well, then the peer review's got to cover both. You know, we just can't sit into a certified engineering geologist. We're going to have both aspects of that have to be peer-reviewed.
Okay, well, if it's just active landslide areas. I'm just going to piggyback on what Bob was bringing up. As far as legal terminology, shall is mandatory and may is permissive.
Yep.
So is this going to bind, is this too binding?
The peer review requirement? I mean, this is something that you felt, I'm not really modifying it other than working in the geotechnical engineer is, you know, as having the ability to perform peer reviews in addition to certified engineering geologists. I think there's good reason to require peer review. You don't have to if you don't want to. But this is something that we specifically added by ordinance, and it was an issue that had come up because of development that was occurring in an active slide area. And there were concerns around it, and you felt it was appropriate to put it in place. That might have been some of the Bill Lund stuff over off Spring Street, that if you might recall Spring in the past, where he got in there and he was doing some, his geotechnical engineer kind of bladed in an access so that he could do some testing, and everybody got upset. That's now a beach access road, and there was a whole lot of other stuff going on with that, but I believe it was about that time when this peer review report was added. So I think on balance it achieves the objective. It certainly, you know, you've got a couple folks on who are listening in who may want to chime in, but I think it does achieve the objective of providing an opportunity to geotechnical engineers to author reports in addition to certified engineering geologists. And I understand and can appreciate, you know, the value in allowing both disciplines to prepare these reports. One thing to keep in mind too is not all projects are different, you know, so you may have a project, for example, that is largely the construction, say, of a retaining wall. And you know, your soil movement, you know, or excavation or fill is largely around that. I mean, that's really far more in a, you know, the geotechnical engineer kind of arena. And you may have other reports that are much, you know, larger, you know, that are looking at a larger area and they're looking at subsurface conditions with very limited engineering aspects to it, where it's more in a certified engineering geologist wheelhouse. They'll make those judgments. I think this provides the flexibility for them to do that. So that's all I've got.
Okay. We have two people on the Zoom. Mr. Shipton, do you have anything to add?
Well, I don't. I like the way it's laid out, that Derek's laid it out. Doesn't put any onus on the city. It's all the responsibility of the design engineer.
Can't understand it.
Yeah, An awful lot of feedback there, Brett, so.
Let me try that again. Is this better?
Well, we can watch your lips now. Yeah.
So I like the way that Derek laid it out. It puts the onus on the geotechnical engineer and takes any liability off the city. So I think it's a good move. I agree with what Derek's proposed.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody have any questions they'd like to ask? Mr. Shipton? Okay. And could we, Meg Reed, do you have anything from the DLCD you'd like to add?
Good evening. No, I just wanted to be here in case any questions came up, but I think what Derek's outlined is very good, and we've seen that in other counties and cities up and down the coast do the same kind of thing, so it makes sense to me.
Okay, thank you. I
have sort of a general question for Derek. Has there been any updates or additions to the hazards maps? We were just talking about being in a geologic, in a landslide zone. That's based on the old maps?
Right. And it's based on LIDAR, the old maps, and then a number of, areas where we've had isolated slope movement that hadn't been previously mapped, so we just have a record of it in the office, and that's picked up by the code too. Hey Meg, is Dogami going to be initiating any new mapping of this nature? I thought I saw something where they were looking into it.
Landslides specifically, or just any?
How about the bluff hazard? Were they going to be revisiting those bluff hazard areas, or not?
It's a good question. I can't remember the last time it was done for Lincoln County and whether it's on the docket to be updated. I can certainly find out. One thing I will note that is coming, and maybe you've seen some of that about it already, Derek, but we have beaches and dunes data coming pretty soon that will be published by Dogami, and that's specifically to be in use with Goal 18, Beaches and Dunes, and that's updating the geo landforms, basically
the
from
dune
the
hazards.
Beach.
Up to coastal terrain.
And that's going to be updated because the maps we've generally had have been from 1975, and so that will be new, and so that'll be really helpful. And so that's an option for cities and counties to adopt that as their inventory and use that. And that can be helpful with identifying hazard areas, too, because it kind of talks about where active foredunes are and conditionally stable foredunes and things like that. But I can find out about the erosion.
We can just double back with you on that one, Bob.
Yeah, I was just curious because they were so bad when we adopted this ordinance years ago. They were just sort of, old, almost
blobs.
Hand-drawn.
Yeah.
They were terrible.
When
I needed a geological permit, it was based on that map because I couldn't even really tell whether I needed it, but it sort of looked like it, so.
Are these the maps? Are you speaking of the maps that were developed through the use of LIDAR a few years back?
No, these are older maps.
Okay, not those
general
more updated that Dogami wanted
right.
to be
no, that,
used.
That
for
would a, be great, is to have updated.
There's a technology I've read about. It may be an improvement on LIDAR, or it may be yet a new one. And I know they have found secondary features that were not available to the previous technology. So
that's, if that effort is undertaken, it's likely to expand the number of properties that are
subject. This is it.
Hopefully they will.
A lot of people will be put at risk of loss of insurance and so on and so forth yet again. So.
Particularly Wade.
Oh, yeah, and Kirky.
70 Trump Street.
We're still working off of the open file report from 2009 on the dune and bluff back shoreline stuff. And that was what George Priest at the time with Dogami was involved with. That was relatively new when we did this major code overhaul in 2011. What Meg said is that the dune component of that might get updated with some of the work that Dogami's about to take on. And then we'll have to double back with you on the bluff erosion areas.
Well, right now we're just using what we
initially adopted,
and we'd have to get involved to change that, right?
You know, yeah.
There is something.
If there is something, then we would be bringing this back for an amendment to add in what that new resource is.
Right.
So, you know, there's nothing imminent at this point. So, who's to say when that additional information is going to be available?
Okay.
The record is closed. At which point in time we can now discuss and make recommendations. And on this particular one, we're making a recommendation to the city council, right, which has the final say on this thing. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with Robert, since I'm looking at Will.
I've read this. I don't have any recommendations. I asked the questions that I had, and they were answered appropriately, so I'm fine.
So are you in favor of the recommendation of Braulio?
Well, I hate to be the sand in the gearbox, but, you know, I think our goal is to what is in the best interest of the community, and I didn't hear an outpouring of concern from the community about modifying or changing the existing ordinance, and I hadn't heard any problems with the existing ordinance, and it wasn't litigation or things like that. So we have the, we have the professional engineer, Mr. Shipton. He requests the change, and Derek, to his credit, went around and solicited input from other professionals in the field. And it seems to me that there are actually two disciplines. And if we look at the information that the lady by the name of Christine Valentin, who's the board administrator for the Oregon State Board of Geologist Examiners, she's got a couple of comments within our packet. She's pretty clear that only a person with the skills that her group monitors can make specific recommendations for a specific site, for suitable site development. So I'm sitting here, and then she kind of rebuts some of the comments made by Mr. Shipton in his initial response. And what she said is, since 2021, there's only been two of the professional engineers who wanted to kind of tag along and get this additional certification. It doesn't seem as though there's any real need to change. And so I'm kind of skeptical, and I point to the materials that we've received. It was the materials Mr. Jonathan Allen, he concurred with Ms. Christine Valentine's assessments. Mr. Jason Barbie, he concurred. And Meg Ryan, she kind of took a neutral response and pointed us down to help us understand the two disciplines. So I can't see any compelling reason to change what, in this person's view, is not broken.
Yeah. It seemed that this issue was brought to us by a group that was suffering hardships because they didn't have the personnel with the expertise. And that seems to have what stimulated this work. I tend to agree with Braulio that people in the know, more in the know than I, do their best to see these two types of professionals as quite different. Yes, overlaps, but still quite different. I thought the system has been working well for us, and I even own a property that had to meet all of this. And I didn't find it, a bit onerous and time-consuming to get people, because there are few of those individuals that are qualified. But I guess I guess I'm a promoter of specialties rather than generalist. So especially in with properties that could have catastrophic issues with them, and that's what we're dealing with, geological hazards, I'd like to see the best or the most the most proficient in understanding those issues to be writing reports, not people that spent a little bit of time in the field with the expert, but the actual expert. So I'm a little, I find a little bit of this problematic. I do appreciate Derek trying to make sure that the community isn't and the city isn't held liable for bad stuff. But we're also here to protect the residents who are going to be building, the developers, and I'd like to see the city reaching out to cover their liability too, so they have something to come back to. So
okay.
That's my point.
Bob?
I'm in favor of the proposal, and my recommendation to the city council would be positive. Those are valid, very valid points about the various disciplines, but it's also valid to say that the geological report is not only hard to come by, it's expensive. And anytime you could have a greater pool of people able to provide a service, that's naturally going to mitigate inevitable rate increases. And as a property owner who has paid for one of these reports, I know it's not cheap. I was trying to put on a deck, and I don't remember the exact. I think it cost me $1,500 just to get somebody to say, yes, the ground is stable enough to put on a deck. I would have liked to gotten that for $500. And I think if we can do anything for the citizens of the community without incurring extra risk, these people, by the way, are essentially putting their entire professional future on the line when they sign that document. Any one that goes bad, they're pretty much done. And so I think I trust in the professionalism of these people to know when they're in over their heads. And so I support the changes without the resume requirement.
Well, and I concur. I think that if there is an issue on any property that goes above their ability to make that assessment, that they're going to have enough expertise to know that and to pass on the liability to somebody that's more qualified than they are. I would recommend that we pass this on to City Council.
And Mr. Updike, the San Francisco Geologic Zones.
Well, in fact, I did look at what we did in San Francisco. I did look at some other cities in Oregon. It does seem the newer codes open it up a little bit, like what we are proposing to do here. I think I'd ask Derek to... There's the mention of a joint compliance committee used to tackle practice overlap issues. Given these two organizations came to us, frankly, with two different answers to the same question about can a PE do this or can a PE not do this? We got a not and we got a can. Seems to me this is an ideal issue for that committee if it does practice. Maybe you could suggest that might help other jurisdictions figure this out if they could get on the same page. I think it'd be helpful. But I'm supportive of what's before us.
Okay, and then I am in favor of it, having also had a very expensive, took 2 months to get a geologist when I was putting a little sidewall in. This was 15 years ago, and it was, you know, it was like $5,000. In reading through this, it appears to me that a geological engineer, if they go forth and say that they're qualified, as Derek had pointed out in some of the changes, really puts the onus on them. And as Gary said, he's, you know, a geological engineer has put a lot of money and expertise into becoming doing that. I mean, it's not a you know, social studies degree. I just can't see them putting them, their whole career at risk by doing something that is not, you know, if they need help, I'm sure they'll signal for help. I mean, you know, the risk to them is just too great. So I would be in favor of it. So would somebody like to make a motion? And this is a motion to forward the recommendation to allow geologists and geotechnical engineers to come up with, can be used either in an either or pattern, I guess is what it boils down to.
I would move that we forward this file 2Z25 to the council with a recommendation for approval with the small edits we made during the meeting.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, the motion has been put forth and seconded, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Okay, the ayes have it.
All right, so we'll go ahead and get this cleaned up with those, take care of those small edits that we discussed earlier, get this in ordinance format and scheduled for probably the city council hearing. It's gonna probably be late July for the council because they don't hold a meeting the first early part of July because of the holiday. That's a tradition for them. So there, and their next meeting's coming up here pretty quick, and that's where they're going to be adopting the budget and doing all that stuff. So this will probably be a late July, but we'll get this all cleaned up and teed up for that meeting.
Do you have any outstanding requests for approvals of geological report at the moment in your office?
Oh, any outstanding? No. No, we don't have any. It's not going to impact anything in the office right now.
Okay,
director comments.
Gary can debrief the volunteer appreciation dinner where he was our one planning commission member that was there.
Where was everybody? It was a very lonely table without
the
all
the night
of
you weren't here, we elected party. You as our representative.
Oh, okay. That was the meeting I missed, huh?
Did you eat enough for seven?
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Did you win a prize?
I did.
Ooh, what did you get?
A $25 just gift certificate to, what was it? Ultra Life Cafe.
Oh, that's good.
That was one in Nye Beach?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was nice that we've got that going again. We used to do that regularly, then COVID kind of put a kibosh to it, and now the city's doing that. So if you have a chance to attend in the future, really encourage you. I know a number you have in the past.
Yeah, I can't pull that the last minute.
But, yeah, it was good. I thought it was nice, and we pulled it off fairly well.
Nice
I think most of the volunteers there seem to have a good time.
Can you talk a little about the work program? We've just fallen off the bottom, or we will as soon as he hits the next hammer.
Yeah, I need to put together.
What happened to those couple of things that were on there that didn't?
They'll still come back. I mean, you know, Beth's not quite where she wants to be with respect to the comp plan streamlining. So she's making some additional edits there. We'll get that back. We'll get that in front of you here pretty soon. And then I've got, you know, I'm in the process of working with the surveyors on moving the annexation piece. Now, that's one that we need to have wrapped up by the end of the calendar year. But one advantage of not pushing the annexation too fast is, one, we've had in the intervening time a couple of annexations. So that reduced the number of properties, and it's reducing the amount of money the city will have to pay on Seal Rock because of the intergovernmental agreement. So we'll get that, you know, we'll get that going here. You know, that's going to be probably a fall thing by the time it gets to you guys.
The county doesn't need to be involved in that at all, do they?
Other than being informed, right. And, you know, just about
it. You don't have to wait for them.
No, but on annexations, believe it or not, the one that I always have to keep an eye on really is Department of Revenue, because they're sticklers on the legal description, and you know, so invariably, whatever a surveyor does, they pick off something that they want to have. And so there's always another round of revisions, and just trying to get that done before it gets in front of council, just logistically sometimes a little tricky, but. And, you know, we may have people who show up on that one, because you're probably going to have some property owners that don't want to be annexed. But we're moving this forward for, you know, because we want to normalize the city limits down there. It is easier for getting utility extensions, and it's a whole lot more straightforward for our emergency responders.
Great. Thank you.
One final thing. So how's the... Newport Toyota thing coming along?
Still haven't seen the new, I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, but so they re-engaged with us and said, hey, we're ditching our original architect. They had a falling out with them, and they've hired a new firm, and they want to downsize the new building from 26,000 square feet to about 20,000 square feet, so about 6,000 square feet they want to shave off, and then they want to kind of reorient the building, but they'll maintain the balance of the, you know, site circulation and landscaping. That'll all be the same. Unfortunately, that means they'll have to come through a conditional use review, and you know, they have all the stuff they need. We just haven't seen the application yet. I expect it any time. And I also had a request and have issued the 12-month extension on the Abbey Hotel down on the Bayfront. They asked for that. I actually had a conversation with John Lee, who's VIP Hospitality. That's their group. They intend to move forward, but the lending environment for hotels has not been good. They got a project going up right now up in Astoria. It might have been Hood River. Sorry. He mentioned they've got a project in one of those towns that's been delayed. You know, they are about to, they've also invested a lot in pivoting and picking up the Sylvia Beach Hotel, and that's about to get opened again post-renovation. They're excited about that. But they've got over $1 million into that property on the Bayfront. They do want to move forward with the project, but they need some additional time.
Are they going to need a geological report for that retaining wall?
No, what John told me was they've done enough analysis that they don't need to, that they can demonstrate that they don't need to touch it, which is good, because it really isn't their wall. It's the condo associations.
Right.
So are they giving away that there's a jog in that wall? Are they giving that property to the homeowner up above?
They're not giving any property to anybody. So...
All right.
Well, Bob, we'll see what we get when they move forward on it.
Yeah,
I did walk John through, though, that if they can't act in the next 12 months, which would be like June of 2026, and pull their permits, then they'll be asking for another 12-month extension from the commission, you guys.
Has there been any talk about another processor moving into town?
No, the conversations we've had with Bornstein and Pax Seafood, most of it is Bornstein has reduced what they're doing and kind of regrouped up in Astoria. And there's a number of reasons for that. Some of it has to do with kind of the larger commercial fishing environment and some of the issues there that have caused processors to struggle. Some of it has to do with their own business decisions that have led them to consolidate up there. And Pax Seafood, they're still one of the issues that all of those processors are dealing with is that they have to modernize how waste is handled from the processing facilities. You know, that's in-water permitting with DEQ. The outfalls are in the bay for PAC Seafood and Bornstein. And, you know, this has been something that's been in the works for many, many years, but now it's coming to a head where they have to meet more current or DEQ requirements in terms of more stringent requirements in terms of the, you know, what they can discharge and how much, you know, solids they put out there. And it's led to a discussion with the port of Newport, who's trying to fund a feasibility study for basically a package treatment, wastewater treatment plant that the port would own but would be operated by the processors on the bayfront. And it's a package treatment plant because it's, think of a mini wastewater treatment plant that's designed for processors to handle intermittent, you know, discharge from those facilities, whereas, you know, most systems you need to have constant flow for it to work. So you have, it'll be custom designed for the processor. So the port's trying to fund a feasibility study. I'm not sure exactly where they're at with that right now, but so the short of it is I don't expect major new fish processing to move down into the bayfront right now. There's just these other issues that have to get sorted out first.
Okay. The meeting's over.
I'm going to take this and make sure my